The following program brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities. The opinions expressed by the members of CFCI and their guests should not be construed as specific investment, legal, or tax advice. All economic and performance information is historical and not indicative of future results. Investing may involve the risk of loss of principal, and any tax advice on the show is not intended to be used by any persons for the purpose of avoiding U.S. federal or state tax. Penalties that may be imposed on such persons and each listener should seek advice from their tax advisor or legal counsel on topics that arise from the show. The representatives of CFCI and their guests are not providing legal or tax advice, and nothing should be construed as a solicitation to offer or buy securities. Now enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the big show, Your Money with David Hayes. Thanks, as always, for hanging out with me for this hour of time on the radio, 43 minutes of talk time if you're a podcast listener. So yeah, here we are on Thursday, weekend before the big homecoming weekend at Indiana University football. There's so much going on, from high school sports to college sports to everything, and just everything. And the weather's starting to get cool, which is fun for me. I love fall weather. And here we sit today in the middle of the market, where it just can't seem to get its head around where it wants to go. Rod's going to come on in just a little bit talking about how the markets are stuck in overreact mode. And certainly I believe that defines it pretty clearly. And, you know, I always go back to the psychology of an investor. You know, I've been carrying this thing around for years. When it talks about the emotion, how it plays such a vital role in the equity markets, emotional cycles often repeat after every bull or bear market, from peaking at a point of invincibility to bottoming in phases of just get me out of here, right? To I'm never going to recover my losses. Whenever you go through a market like this and people sort of understand what's going on, they understand you can't fight the Fed, they understand interest rates have risen dramatically, which has affected their fixed income, very few places to hide this year. And then all of a sudden you see the market just boom back for a couple of days early on this week, and you're like, what's going on here? So we have a lot to talk about, but that is one part we're going to talk about, how the markets wrapped up a wild quarter in retreat, the third quarter that is. But the start of the fourth quarter with a bang for the first 2 days, at least Monday and Tuesday. And then when the markets are like this, some throw in the towel, right, and seek shelter or safety. History tells us cashing out can backfire big time. And we'll dig into that topic a little bit deeper today when we come back, and we will, why it's so important to stay the course. And I know you've heard this, it's like a broken record, but I have some real math, I have some real stats on this that hopefully will convince you how volatility is actually normal. It's not something out of the norm. And despite market pullbacks, stocks go up over time, and the best returns often happen when everything feels the worst. And I know a saying that I used a lot back in 2020 and 2021, mostly in 2020, was when you don't think it can get any worse, it usually does. And if you have that mentality, it's like, okay, it could get worse, and it could before it gets better, then that'll allow you to sort of stay the course and have a good plan and a good outcome. And then finally, I'm going to talk about the thing that I've been harping on forever, right? Have you done your Roth conversions yet for the year? Missing out on huge opportunities if you aren't taking advantage of what's been literally put right in front of us. But yeah, going back to that psychology of an investor, the way it typically works, you look at a market that starts to turn around and people get optimistic, right? And then sometimes they lose the optimism, like we've been back and forth this year, mostly back, right? Not forth a lot, mostly back, especially last month in September. And then you look at the next phase of the psychology, which is kind of excitement. Hey, man, this has got some legs. We're going to keep on going. And then you get to the point where it's like, man, will this thing ever go down? This is repeat, repeat, repeat. I've done this so many times in this program over the last 20-plus years, but it's always the same. Then it starts to go down, right? And we have the denial, the fear, and sometimes the panic, capitulation, and then despondency. I don't feel like we are at the capitulation stage. I don't think we're at the panic stage. Most people I've talked to are not panicked. Fearful, maybe a little bit. I think they move straight down to despondency, right? Will this thing ever turn around? But then when it does, and it happens quicker than you ever think it should, which we'll get into more later, then you have some hope, and then you have some relief, and then you're back to optimism. And the piece that I pulled out, which is interesting because I have a bunch of notes written on it, and I've used this cycle for years, like I said, and it's pretty much always the same. But I look at these notes I made. When it got to despondency, I said, will this ever end? There is no way out of this economically. Look how much money I have lost, right? But the next thing I have by hope is the vaccine is close. Relief, I got the vaccination. Vaccinations are here. When can I get it? And then optimism. And this is where basically my notes stop, which is somewhere around April or May of that year. So yeah, and if you go back and look at that market, did things really dramatically get better in May when the market started to bump and turn the other way so quickly? No, we still had a long road ahead. And it's interesting when I do look back from October of 19 to February 20, stocks pushed to the highest ever. Fear and volatility were so low. Complacency was high. To then all of a sudden you get into, will the virus be contained to China? But our economy's strong. I was here during all this saying these exact same things, right? Virus spreads exponentially. Outbreaks in Italy, South Korea, likely spreads to the U.S. will be a slight negative for the U.S. economy. These are all headlines, right? And then we start to get some outbreaks in the U.S. We start getting closures. Now we start panicking. And then we had a few that said, just get me out, which they got out at the wrong time, because when we got into the despondency mode, really hope and relief came fairly quickly from a historical perspective. So yeah, it's just so good to keep things in perspective. And thankfully we have people like Rod at our fingertips, Rod Holloway, of course, over at our office CFCI, to help guide us a little here. And we also have him on Glass in the Afternoons on both Mondays and Fridays. And then yours truly to talk about what's coming up on the program on Wednesday. So let's take a quick break. When we come back, the markets did wrap on a wild quarter in the third quarter in retreat, but the fourth quarter started with a bang. That was Monday and Tuesday when we had one of the biggest two-day gains since the pit of 2020. We'll get Rod's reaction to that idea of the market being stuck in this overreaction mode. We'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Welcome back, everyone. It's Your Money with David Hayes. Rod Holloway, the investment guru down at CFCI, is now on the phone and a common contributor to the big program, as well as Glass in the Afternoon on Mondays and Fridays. And Rod, I can tell you this, the market's wrapped up a wild quarter in retreat, of course, and then we jump out this quarter with the largest two-day gain Monday and Tuesday we've seen since April of 2020. Stocks kind of jumped again on Tuesday after Monday, big rally, extending a strong start to the fourth quarter and giving a little relief to folks as they have had weeks of punishing losses. But there was an article in the Wall Street Journal. It was really good about how the markets seem to be stuck in overreaction mode. And let me start with August. We had this August where the market continued to gain, where it seemed to ignore what was being said by the Fed, looking for every single angle as an excuse to bid prices up. Then you had the reality set up in September, and it had to be one of the worst months we've had in a long time, where the Fed's like, nope, here it is, and here's where we're going. And then, boom, we have the two of the biggest days that we've had in a long time since April of 2020, back-to-back. I think the Dow was up over 1,500 points. So, yeah, the markets seem to be stuck in a little bit of this overreaction mode, but, boy, it seems like starting this quarter that it's just, it wants to go up. It wants to look at what's happening abroad where people are slow. When I say people, central banks are starting to maybe even loosen up or slow down the pace of interest rate rises. And we're kind of back maybe into that August mode, but carefully, but it is in this overreaction mode both ways. At least it seems that way.
Yeah, I think so. And I think part of what's creating that is it appears the market is working on hope. And I talk a lot about that, especially when it comes to a trading perspective. And not that we encourage a lot of trading amongst our clients, but in the professional, in the institutional world where they do trading, the last thing you ever want to do is to be in a position that you hope that the market moves in some direction or another. Usually when you get to it being a hope trade, it's probably a failed trade and you should probably get out of it. But the market keeps seeming to hope for a pause, even though there is nothing indicated out of the Fed that has said that they have any interest in pausing whatsoever. Matter of fact, even this morning, Neil Kashkari, one of the Minneapolis Fed member, comes out this morning and says, we have not seen anything that dictates to us that we have seen peak inflation, and there is no reason for us to take a pause and not continue fighting inflation. Now, I think there are some fairly strong arguments that people are making outside of inflation as to why maybe there would be a reason for a pause. But I think part of the other thing that's going to contribute to the Fed's lack of wanting to pause is anytime the market sniffs that maybe there is a pause, a big rally begins. Well, like I told Glass this week on Monday when he asked, well, what are some of the things that you would look for to feel more comfortable that you could begin to build a long-term uptrend? Part of that is valuations. And if we just take off screaming right here from now because the Fed says they're going to pause, we're going to quickly end up in an overvalued market from a earnings multiple in the environment we're in of rising interest rates and higher inflation. So I think that will play a lot into the Fed from the standpoint of whether they do or don't pause. But yeah, I mean, the strong dollar is having an impact elsewhere. Obviously, Europeans' energy crisis is having a problem on them. Now, the rest of the world has inflation problems just like we do. And in many cases, their inflation is even worse than the problem we have. But some of those central banks have started to take a slightly different approach in which they say, yes, inflation is bad, and yes, we need to fight it and get it to come down. But they're not sure that they want to destroy demand simply to beat the battle against inflation, and that they want to maintain some growth while they attempt to fight the inflation. Right now, our Fed seems to be 100% driven on we're going to beat inflation, and then we'll deal with the after effects of beating inflation and where the economy's at and what the next thing should be as far as from the Fed's perspective in that. But I think part of that is part of what's leading to what you're talking about, or as I have called it, the whipsaw effect, in which you think you're starting to build a new trend and suddenly it stops and it reverses very quickly and moves back in the other direction very powerfully. But it doesn't last for any longer than a few days or so, of course, other than the selling, which has been consistent for the year, and we've trended downwards. But within that downward trend, there has been a lot of very quick and rapid short-term moves within it.
Yeah, I'm seeing that big 2-day gain Monday and Tuesday reminded me of our next topic, which is when the markets are like this. Some people throw the towel in and seek safety and shelter, but history tells us cashing out can backfire big time, and there's several reasons to stay invested. But Rod, I'm going to slip back for just one comment you made about valuations. Folks, you have to remember, when interest rates are up 3, 4, 5, 6, 7% on fixed income, a lot of history says that there's no reason to buy up for gain when you can slip over there and get a good chunk of it just from interest. And as for a year or two, three, I don't even know how long, the Treasury rates were below what the S&P 500 dividend rate was. So like we said a few years ago, hey, it gives us permission to buy up for this, for these equities. And then as rates move quickly, it gave us less permission to buy up for those earnings. So these are normal cycles that we go through, very difficult to figure out when you should jump in or jump out, because when markets recover or start to recover, you look around and you think, nothing's changed. And if you wait until you really think that things have changed, you've missed out on the majority of the first big run. And when we come back, Rod, I want to get some history here for people to lean back on to say, okay, I get it, Hayes, I get it, Holloway. I need to just stay the course and not get too panicked and kind of get through this, and I'm going to be okay. So we'll take a quick break. We'll hang on to Rod. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, Rod, we've been at this a long time. I mean, I've been at this 29 years. 29 years. U28, moving to 30 and 29. I mean, we have been through, have seen a lot. And I don't want to sound like a broken record to people where we pat them on the back and say, it's going to be okay. You're in it for the long run. But the reality of it is when you go back and look at history, there's a lot of reasons to stay invested right now. Number one, people need to understand volatility is common. You know, we went through a period where we just didn't see a lot of it for a long time, especially in the latter part of an economic expansion. History shows us the people that moved out of stocks during down markets didn't fare nearly as well as those that stayed the course. So to help manage volatility, consider whether your stock or bond mix or real estate mix or whatever it might be matches your risk tolerance, and then consider maybe adding other things that could offer inflation protection or whatever. But I always say this is not the time to judge your risk tolerance and change dramatically. Do your risk tolerance right now, and when things recover, and they will, I can't tell you exactly when, then make the adjustments. Don't do it now. Wait, because as I've said many, many times in the past, no one knows how much risk they can take until they've taken too much, and then it's like way too late. So those are some basic things that people need to lean on. But Rob, when you look at history, history tells us, shows us that people that have, and listen, I know I've said this a lot, right? But when you go back and you look at history and you say, what if I invested $10,000 in the S&P 500 back on January 1st of 1980 through the end of March of 2021, and I just stayed invested, how much would I have? Well, you'd have a lot. I was looking at this number, and I usually check and verify the math, right? I don't really look at it and say, okay, that seems a little bit high, but maybe it's not. But anyway, let's go with what this says. It comes from a pretty reliable source, actually Fidelity Investments, but it shows a person having like $1 million. And that's if they just stayed invested all of those days. And there's a lot that happened in the 80s and into the 90s and into the 2000s. It's a long time. But here's the crazy thing. Missing five of the best days, you're going to have 38% less money by missing five of the best days over that 30-plus year period of time. If you miss 10 of the best days, you lost 55% of that gain. And if you're out an entire month, over 84% of the gain. Now, Rod, here's the thing that people need to understand. When you miss the best days, or sometimes the worst days, but the best days, many times they come back to back or back to back to back. And I'm looking at the last Monday and Tuesday and thinking we could look back, you know, many years and say, wow, that was two of the five best days that had we missed those days, we might have been really losing out on some significant gain. So it's just math, folks. It's history and math. I'm not trying to convince you of anything more than just listen. It's history and math. So, Rod, over and over and over, we have had people over the years, not many. I will give people credit. They typically turn the keys over, let the pros handle it, let us take the emotion out of it. But occasionally you get people freaked out, and they're like, I want to go to cash. I want to do this. And if we look back at those individuals, you can compare side by side. This person that did that and this person that did this, and the difference is significant. And over the short run, maybe the guy that went to cash was good, but when you look at the long term, they never know when to get back in. They're not getting in back right now. They're still scared. They're going to wait until things are completely better, and by that time, they've missed out on that first 20% on the upside, which is the easiest and fastest and always in the beginning, and they're sitting there thinking, I wish I could have, would have done it, whatever it might be. Rod, we've seen it over and over and over. So our job is to convince people, as painful as it seems at times, to if you're on a course, even though it's been disrupted in some cases a pretty major way, you have to stick the course.
Yeah, because part of the problem is, and it's alluded in the statistics you rolled out with missing the five best days, the 10 best days, is because when the recovery happens, it will come in lumps. And very quick lumps in the early stages. So to the point you just made, at anywhere near a bottom, and we're not suggesting anyone can predict the exact bottom, but anywhere near it, you don't feel good about the marketplace. You're not excited to put the money to work. So if that's your gauge as to when you're going to put the money back in, well, yeah, you're going to miss those big rallies, because until you see those big rallies and there's a big move up, you're not going to feel confident that, oh, okay, I should go back in here. And that's part of why we say stick to it, because we're not suggesting that you should be able to properly time the market, miss the big sell-off, and then jump back in and capture the majority of the run-up after that big sell-off. So the most important thing typically is where we talk about proper allocation of the dollars and the time needed. So from that aspect, some of the things you said earlier, as long as your allocation is appropriate from the standpoint that dollars exposed to equity are still long-term dollars and you don't need them for a while, you most certainly should stay the course until there is a recovery if you discover that, hey, my allocation was probably a little too aggressive for what I can truly take. Wait until you get a recovery to change that. But if you have dollars you expose to the equity market and you need them in the near term, well, that's a very dangerous game to wait and think that the market will recover within 6 months if that is your time horizon of when you need it. So in that case, you're better off saying, you know what, hey, I made a mistake, I overexposed myself, but rather than make my situation worse than it already is, because while we may think that the market is overdone and oversold, an oversold market can become even more oversold, which would potentially mean you have even less dollars for that need in the short term. But that's the appropriate thing that really has to be analyzed is time horizons, because the longer you go out in the stock market, and we used to have a chart on this, and I think I handed it off to Doug, maybe even you got a copy, but it basically showed the longer you're in the stock market, the more and more the risk shrinks down, and over 10, 15, 20 year periods, your risk of owning equities isn't a lot greater than your risk of owning bonds. But the shorter that time horizon is, 3 months, 6 months, 1 year, 2 years, then yes, there's most certainly a lot more risk in the equity side of things than there is on the bond side of things.
You know, you mentioned the worst behind us. We can't guarantee it's behind us or whatever. But when you look at bonds, I'm more confident that bonds, the worst is behind us. Folks, if you own something that matures in 10 years and you're getting paid 2.5% and now the market demands 4 or 5, who's going to buy your bond? That's why it's worth 10% less. They're like, I'm not touching that thing, but you can keep it. It's almost like I'm in the middle of negotiating a lease on a commercial piece of property that I own. And we're looking at a 10-year lease, which I'm grateful to have a 10-year lease. But I'm thinking, okay, if I lock this rate in with this kind of potential increase each year, which is pretty modest, and I'm stuck with it for 10 years, and I get into this thing 3 or 4 years, and all of a sudden rents are 10 times, you know, up 10%, not 2%, and I'm holding this asset for the next 7 years, getting lower rents, guess what? My property's worth less. Commercial real estate is generally, the value is based on your cash flows and how it relates to the rest of the market. It's the same thing in a bond. So don't freak out. Two things to think about. Number one, if you own individual bonds, just write it out, because the closer you get to maturity, the value will gradually come up, and maybe by the time that comes around, interest rates will come back down. If you're in bond funds, the problem with funds right now is that Rod, maybe you can back me up on this. I was told this at a conference I was recently at, that there was a pretty massive outflow of bonds, mid part of this year, but they're actually starting to see bond fund flows increase, like go the other way. So if you're in a fund and it's down a bunch, yeah, you don't have a defined maturity date, but if more money's coming in, the fund manager can buy higher coupons, then guess what? You're participating in that. So you may very well get a recovery in your bond fund. Certainly not a defined date, but people need to understand that bonds are the big culprit here, because unlike previous times in our history, take out the financial crisis in 2008, where everything was down. This is really the first time in our career we would look at it and say, wow, stocks are down. Bonds should be somewhat of a buffer, but it's not been. In fact, it's created more problems to the portfolio. So, Rod, just quick comment on fixed income, and then we'll let you out of here.
Yeah, sure. So rates are probably going to continue to go up. So we're still going to have that upward pressure on rates, which creates downward pressure on the existing price of bonds out there. So credit quality is the important thing to stay on top of, because to your point, as long as credit quality is fine and the backing entity to that bond is still around on maturity, well, you get your par value back, plus you collected interest all along the way. Eventually, rates will stop going up, and probably at some point in time, we're still hopeful that it doesn't happen, but I still have great concern that the Fed pushes it to a level that knocks us into recession. Well, how do they combat a recession? They begin to lower interest rates again. And then at that point in time, those higher yielding bonds that you potentially own start appreciating in value because the new bonds are coming out at lower interest rates. So then you have the opposite effect. Downward pressure on rates, upward pressure on the value of bonds. But yeah, from the individual bond perspective, it's very comforting to know the date that my interest payment comes in, as well as the expiration date of that bond and when I get my principal back. Now, the same thing's going on inside your bond fund. You, as an individual owner of the bond fund, you just don't have those exact numbers, and those numbers are changing on a daily basis as the bond manager does trading within there, so you hope he does an appropriate job. Of course, there are short windows in which the bond manager kind of gets hurt just simply by flows. If too many flows come out and there aren't enough buyers, well, then they have to sell their best bonds to encourage people to buy them versus selling the bonds they like the least and would like to get rid of. But that will slowly work itself out, especially with the better managers in the bond world out there.
Rod, I know we'll hear you on Glass in the Afternoon tomorrow. I'm actually going to be out of town this weekend again for, unfortunately, I'll be missing the big weekend with Michigan coming into town. Homecoming weekend. Should be a great crowd, great day. Early start, noon. Of course, our tailgate will be out there in full force. Hope it'll be a good showing for the Hoosiers. And then, then we back at it on Monday morning. But everyone can hear you on Big Show Friday tomorrow on Glass in the Afternoon. So we appreciate what you do, man.
All right, thanks, Dave. Have a great show, and I'll talk to you later.
All right, guys, when we come back, just a little deeper dive into some of the thoughts I've had just on keeping perspective on things, right? So we'll be back. It's Your Money with David Hayes. All right, well, Rod was talking in break time. I was able to get my handy-dandy calculator out and just confirm some of these numbers that I looked at. $10,000 invested in the S&P 500 January 1, 1980 until March of 2021, like four decades, right? When you look at that, the amount of money that you had if you stayed invested through March was a little more than $1 million bucks. If you miss those five best days and they get clustered together, you have 676,000. 10 days, 487,000. If you missed the best 30 days, and this is over 40 years. I mean, put that in for perspective, 40 years. Then your return is only $176,000, 84% less than what you would have had you stayed all in. Over $800,000 had you stayed all in. So it is important to understand how history works. Now, if you are like a cash hog, right? I'm like, holding cash, that can be risky too. I mean, especially when you have inflation the way we've had it. Every time we get an inflation rate that comes out that says it's 5 to 10% or whatever, then it buys less, right? It just buys less. So a better plan of action would be to find something that you can get a yield on that at least protects you some. And we have talked about this on the show. You can go out and get short-term treasuries that, even though I know we preach on the fact that the country is $30 to $1 trillion in debt, adding $1 trillion deficits, the cost of borrowing is going up, that financial issues are coming for the U.S., it still is looked at as the safest investment in the world. So do I feel confident you're going to get paid? Absolutely. And you can go out and put money to work, cash to work, and pick up substantially more than you're going to have in the bank. So that's an opportunity just to have a little bit better plan of action. And then if you're buying things, you know, that produce big dividends like REITs, that's something else. Some people like commodities, you know, just anything that does well in an inflationary environment. What did I say months ago? If inflation comes into play, and it looked like it was going to, we were the ones here saying this is not transitory. Now, if inflation goes away, back to their targets in a couple of years, they're going to look back and say, historically, this was transitory. It only lasted about 3 to 4 years, as painful as it was. To me, transitory meant like super temporary, but I don't know what that means. Like, what does transitory mean? I looked it up one time, and it means temporary. So everyone's view of temporary is different. I guess if you live, you know, 90 years of life and three of them were pretty miserable, then you would say the miserable years were pretty transitory, right? But anyway, that's just wordsmithing there to come up with what that actually means. But there's always a good and a better plan of action. If you just sit there and do nothing, that sometimes works out. If you look at where you are and where we're likely to go, maybe you should reposition some things around. It's very difficult when you own mutual funds or 401k plans. You have no control over that, but hopefully the folks that select the funds for your 401k, and I'm pretty confident they do, they go through a very stringent, very process-driven type of selection process and then a monitoring process to ensure that we have some of the best funds available. And now what's that mean? You're relying on a manager or a team of people to make these selections and get you in the right positions. Now, the thing that you cannot judge is a book by its cover. If a fund says, I am the growth fund of Bloomington or whatever, what does that mean, right? So I know I have a definition of what growth stock should be, or value stock should be, or dividend payers should be. But what happens in some environments, and I've been through many of them, right? I've been through coming out of the 2000s where a fund that on the surface appeared that it would be a fund that would own high quality U.S. dividend paying stocks was actually peddling over in the high tech things because that's where all the return was coming from at that time leading up into 2000. And they got whacked, right? So you sometimes need to look under the hood. And there's some software out there that you would have to probably seek out professional help to do this, but where they can do an overlap study where they look at all your funds and say, well, look at this. You own six funds, but 80% of it's all in the same stuff. Or drifting, like where if a fund manager says, this is what I'm doing, are they drifting to a different style and you're getting overweighted to different areas? And I'm not saying that's bad. I'm just saying you need to understand what you have. And that way, if something does happen, you can say, okay, I get it. I get why I was down and I shouldn't have been. Or I know why I'm up more than maybe most people are. So 2001 and 2. And then, of course, we had the great financial crisis of 08 and 9. Of course, we remember all of what happened in 2020. And that wasn't much of a normal situation. And certainly not what's causing our pain now. In fact, the things that we did to help keep us from having dramatic pain in 2020 are much of the reasons why we're feeling the pain now. So having a better plan of action, having someone to talk to, having a conversation, a financial coach, someone that can just make reason of what's happening, especially in rough times. And I wouldn't say that now is any different than that. So here's the thing. Anytime we're in front of a group of people, whether it is at a workshop for an employer group, every Ivy Tech retirement course. Doug just completed one Wednesday night. He's another one going on tonight, Thursday night, and he'll have the second part of that next week. Attendance wasn't as great as what I was hoping it to be. I think maybe people are just a little despondent right now. Like, the last thing I want to do is go to a retirement workshop. I don't even want to look at my retirement account. So there's some logic there. We just don't want to leave you hanging. So I always say that have a conversation with someone that knows things, and we will make that happen for you. We offer it up on the podcast. If you listen to the podcast, every podcast we talk about at the end, these are complicated topics. If you'd like to have a discussion, please reach out to us. We do it in every workshop as part of an obligation, but also a desire at all these employer-based group workshops or Ivy Tech courses or whatever it might be to say, listen, we want to be your sounding board. And what does that look like? Well, if you go to cfci.us and just contact us and say, I'd like to have a conversation, right? That's all it is. And we'll set up a 20 to 30 minute call with you individually. It would not be with me personally, but it would be with one of our highly qualified advisors. And they would have a talk with you. And sometimes that is a very productive call. And you ride off into the sunset with what you need to do, or at least after discussion, what you should consider doing. Or sometimes it leads to a deeper conversation, but there's no catch in this thing. So if that's you and you're simply like, yeah, I'd really like to talk to someone, but I'm really not comfortable like calling a financial advisor. I know I've been listening to Hayes and his group for years, but I still just don't feel comfortable just calling up, setting an appointment, bringing all my financial stuff, which I really don't want even look at right now, and exposing myself to vulnerability, which I know that's the way a lot of people feel. I'm just going to say, listen, what's the harm in having a 20-minute call, right? It's 20 minutes. It could be something that puts you on a wonderful course. It could lead to some other things, who knows? And we go from there. So if you'd like to participate in one of those, we are, you know, we've been busy, but that's okay. We have the capacity to help out. Again, go to cfci.us. Go to contact us. Tell them you'd like to have your 20 to 30 minute call, and we'll just make it happen. I promise you that. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, finally, have you done your Roth conversions for this year yet? Shame on you if you haven't. We'll be back. This is Your Money with David Hayes. You know, it is kind of weird if you've never sat down with a financial person. Am I sitting down with the right person? What do I really want to open up to and disclose? What are they after? If I come in, are they wanting me to invest all my money? You know, what is it? So, you know, hopefully you can have a conversation with somebody, gauge whether or not this is an engagement that you'd like to pursue a little further, or you're getting everything you need on that call and you move on. All right, so finally, here we are. We're in October. My anniversary is coming up soon, October 23rd. Have you done your Roth conversions yet? Now, Roth conversions for IRAs are simple. You just say, I want to do this much. You don't have to do it all, right? Pick an amount that makes sense for you and your situation. You literally convert it from your traditional to your Roth, and you're doing it likely at low asset prices. Relative to where they were. I mean, Rod could argue, oh, no, they're really not that low. They're fairly valued, all that. But I'm just saying that you moved it over. Your value's around 20%, let's say. When it recovers, you don't have to sell anything. You can move it over. Just leave it. Just let it be. When it recovers, and like I keep saying, it will, then all of that growth is tax-free. I did some math for someone recently that's in a 37% tax bracket. They're doing a pretty substantial Roth conversion, really to avoid future Medicare premiums and runaway our required minimum distributions. And we did the math. I'm like, hey, you know, if this happens and this happens, then within maybe potentially this amount of time, we'll have all of your tax money back that you paid, and it'll all be tax-free in the Roth. So that's important. Roth conversions for 401k plans, again, most plans allow it. But if they don't allow it, you know, you might have an option to roll money out of the 401k into an IRA while you're still working. That's available for a lot of people, 59 and a half or older. And then you can do your Roth conversion. Figure out where you're going to pay the tax from. You know, it's important to understand that, because if you don't have the money, there's all kinds of rules you have to follow. And if you would like to hear a complete dissertation on this, you can go to 2025, The Final Drive. It's a podcast when I talk in depth about all of this. You can start with number one if you want. That's the long one. That's the why this is so important to me podcast. But you can scroll through, look at the titles, and pretty much figure out which ones you want to listen to and on which topics. Now, I've taken a couple week hiatus as we've been working through a couple topics and some compliance things that I'm still subject to. And I promise that we will have some new ones coming out very soon, as I've already recorded them, just kind of waiting on the all clear. Yeah, and then you can start listening to them again. We're up to number 32, I believe, right now. Number 32, and I've got one that I'm going to redo called How Do I Make My Money Make More Money, right? Who doesn't want that to happen? How Do I Not Pay Taxes When I Sell a Piece of Real Estate at a Profit? That's the one I've already recorded that we're still trying to get compliance approval for, and that's where we are on things. So if you haven't done your Roth conversion yet, we're in the last quarter of the year. If you don't take advantage of the tax bracket you're in, the cash you have in the bank to pay off the debt now, maybe the refund that you were expected to get, and you don't use that to convert some of this money to tax-free forever, by the way, not just tax-free going for 1 year, it's tax-free forever. And again, another podcast on multi-generational Roth wealth. Listen to that podcast. If that doesn't convince you, then you might as well quit listening, because you're never going to be convinced that you should be doing something now. And again, that's a blanket statement. Is that true for everyone? Sure, it's not for everybody. But for the majority of people, yes, I found that for the majority of people, they need to do something. And the gift card that you have in your hand that says, if I do something now this year, not only do I get to do it at a 20% discount, but I also get to do it at 12% or 20, you know, whatever rate you're at. And at the end of the year, December 31st, that gift card gets flushed down the toilet and it goes completely away. So you have to do something now. And don't wait till the last minute. If you wait until, you know, even mid-December a lot of these custodians, they're so overwhelmed with the, with last minute conversions that they just say, no, we're cutting it off. In fact, one of the major ones we deal with said nothing after something like the 12th of December. I can't, that name, that date pulled out of my head, but it's around, not even mid-December, sometime around early to mid-December that you have to have your decisions made. So yes, that is something that you should be doing. You should be completely focused on. And as you well know, the older you get, the faster time goes. That's not going to stop. And here we are in October already. I'll be married 29 years on October 23rd of this year, and it seemed like yesterday. So that's my story. I'm sticking to it. When we come back, we'll wrap it up with kind of the Medicare enrollment stuff. It's Your Money with David Hayes. You know, I mentioned earlier that if you needed a little sounding board and you wanted to talk with someone for 20 minutes or so, reach out. No obligation. We don't charge for it. It's just more of a, hey, we're here to help kind of a thing. Give us a shout at cfci.us. Well, don't forget, if you need a sounding board for Medicare, it's open enrollment period, or you're turning 65 soon and you need a trusted local source to talk to about your options and what you should do, if anything, go to our website, cfci.us. Go to Josh Norris. Just go directly to him. You'll see it under our list team members. Email him directly. He'll get back to you with a time to talk one-on-one. Again, a free complimentary consultation. He's just here to help as well. Now, I will say this. He has young kids. They're in school, and I guess fall break is upon us. So I just saw him this morning briefly, and they will be heading out to Orange Beach for a little fall break action, but he'll be back. And I'm sure he'll be checking his emails while he is gone. So once again, if you'd like to have a Medicare discussion or a discussion about anything, as we do with our Ivy Tech courses or employer-based groups, please feel free to reach out. No problem. We can do it for you, cfci.us. So, and just a quick recap. I know the markets have been crazy. History says those that overreact come out on the short end of the stick, so stay the course. Also, if you have not done a Roth conversion, you need to really consider that. And also, just kind of getting some perspective on coming out of 2020 to or 2008, 2009, 2000, 2002. We can learn something from every time. And after you've been through this since 1994, folks, that's how long I've been doing this for a profession or as a passion. And many years here on the radio, 20 years. I think by now I have a good perspective, and hopefully, I'm sharing this with you and hoping to make you, helping you make good decisions. All right, guys, we're going to take a break. I will be back in the hot seat next Thursday. We're going to start lining up some guests again for the fourth quarter of the year. Until then, go Hoosiers, and we'll talk to you again next week, everyone. Bye-bye.
The preceding program was brought to you by Comprehensive Financial Consultants and CFCI, which is solely responsible for its content. Securities are offered through J.W. Cole Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. Investment advice offered through CFCI and J.W. Cole Advisors. J.W. Cole Financial, J.W. Cole Advisors, and CFCI are unaffiliated entities.